Welcome back to another episode of Stacking Denny's. I'm Jordan Maccabee of Rotoballer, my co-host Nick Giffen of the Action Network. Denny Hamlin gets it done in victory lane. Your boy Denny Hamlin, Nick, twice in a row at Bristol in a race that, man, we got a lot to talk about. Everyone has a lot to talk about this race. You know, if you listen to Denny's podcast, Action's Detrimental, after the race, they actively tried to figure out what the hell happened, you know, with the tire wear, the extreme tire wear in that race. Overall, you know, 87% Jeff Gluck's poll said that that was a good race. We both agree with that. I know some people are a little surprised that that number wasn't higher than that, wasn't in the 90s. Here's the thing, though. That first run of that race, that had the potential to be an absolute shit show of a race. The reason that that race did not go too crazy was because it put everything in the driver's hands and allowed them to truly manage the tires and make it an actual race. And we haven't seen that in a very long time. And it kind of came out of nowhere because, yes, there was those issues in practice, but I don't think any team expected that to happen there at Bristol. But guess who was top three? The veterans. Denny Hamlin, Martin Truex Jr., Brad Keselowski, all very good at managing their tires. And that's what won the race at the end of the day. And you, like I said, Denny Hamlin in victory lane, Joe Gibbs Racing once again, absolutely dominating, you know, second week in a row that they have done that and second Bristol race in a row. What did you think? Do you think we learned much from that race? You know, from what I heard on Denny's podcast, he pretty much blamed it on the temperature of the track. And that's why the track wouldn't take any rubber. You know, obviously, we don't know what the temperature is going to be like in the fall, but it was definitely quite a surprise for Goodyear and NASCAR overall.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've heard different perspectives on it. You know, Denny mentioned the temperature, but I can't remember if it was Goodyear or Dr. DeAndre, or I don't remember who, but other people said that, you know, the temperature was pretty much the same as the last Bristol race, which is interesting because I think it has to do maybe with just night versus day, and maybe the ambient temperature was different or the track temperature was different, one or the other, I don't know. Plus then you have the difference between the PJ1 and the resin. That was another potential factor, so we'll have to wait and see and find out about that. But I thought the whole race was really good. Even the first stint where you said it had the potential to be a shit show, it actually ended up arguably the best part of the whole race was the first part, because
yeah,
everybody was passing and then getting passed once they realized they were wearing their tires out. Like, we saw four or five just straight up passes for the lead in about a 10 lap span at Bristol with like three or four different drivers. So, I mean, it was wild. It was intense. And then of course, then the tire issues really started rearing their head, and, you know, Kyle Busch, ended up driving backward after he spun out, all this stuff. So, you know, once everybody figured out, oh my God, the tires are wearing like crazy, then, you know, it actually calmed down a little bit. It still was, I mean, crazy. They were still passing constantly everywhere, but it certainly calmed down a little and turned into a driver's race. And that's where Denny Hamlin and guy who sucks at Bristol, Martin Truex Jr., ended up finishing second. You know, I don't think Truex had one of the best cars. He just knows how to deal with this type of situation. And that's kind of what it needs. And, you know, there probably was a little bit of something to maybe set up or obviously driver experience as well. But, you know, we saw Denny and Truex do just fine, but then we saw Ty Gibbs have an issue. So, you know, overcooking the tires, but maybe that's a little more inexperience. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, three veteran drivers finished 1, 2, 3, three of like the longest tenured drivers in the whole series up there with, you know, maybe like a Kyle Busch. So it certainly was a testament to experience, and it was a fun race. It was a fun race. It certainly was a race none of us would have ever expected to happen. And I think that was, you know, part of the intrigue about it was, wow, this is unlike anything we've ever seen before at Bristol.
Yeah, it was, you know, we went into that race, you know, a lot of question marks, not really knowing what to expect. Practice didn't tell us a lot. There was a lot of questions after practice. But like I said, I don't think anybody could have predicted, you know, that race turning out like that. And like you've tweeted, like, if we would have known that, we would not have bet how we did. We would not have analyzed anything like that race like we did. It was completely almost out of left field. And I know everyone thinks it's a good thing, I'm really curious now how the hell this affects, you know, the next Bristol race. And yeah, because that's later on in the year, and it's going to have more importance. But, you know, like you said, Ty Gibbs, he won the first two stages. He led 137 laps, looked to have the best car. I don't know how he screwed up that last run, because his tires were not wearing during the other runs. He drove up through the field and still won stage two. And then all of a sudden during that last run, it's like he just completely lost it. That was weird to me. You know, solid showing. John Hunter Nemechek gets his career best finish, finished sixth. He was fifth and fourth in the two stages. Like I said, Keselowski ended up third. Alex Bowman was fourth. Kyle Larson somehow ended up fifth. I don't even think Larson knew how the hell he ended up fifth. I certainly didn't know. Watching the race, I was waiting for him to pit again. I'm like, there's no way Larson pulls off this top five. He did. Like I said, Nemechek sixth, Buescher seventh, Chase Elliott eighth, Ty Gibbs ninth, and Christopher Bell rounding out top 10. Shout out to Josh Berry, qualified second, finished 12th. He led 25 laps. Yep. He was one of those drivers that absolutely loved that race and having to conserve the tires and just everything about it. So a couple other guys that deserve mentions, and I want to like give these guys some spotlight. Justin Haley and Kaz Grala, they were legitimate top 15 runs all day. They faded there late, which sucks to see. You know, those Rick Ware Racing cars, you don't really see them run very well. But Justin Haley had a legitimate good car, as did Grala. So they definitely deserve. Why do you think that is? Because I have my theory that because their cars aren't as good as everybody else, they can't run as hard. So they're natively not running as hard. And that's why their tires did not, like, that's why they were able to do that. They got track position and stayed there.
Yeah, I mean, I would reword that into their running hard is not running hard for others. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there we go. I think they probably were, but they could probably run close to full out and not wear the tire as well as others had to back off. And you know what that does? It levels the competition. When the fast cars have to go slower, but the slower cars can go as fast as they want, it levels the competition. And then it puts it a little bit more into a level playing field. And that's why you saw Kaz Grala move into the top 10. Justin Haley moved in the top 10. Before fading, once we got to that really last stint and the drivers knew they were probably good on tires, they could kind of go a little harder there at the end, and that's where we saw them fade. Plus just pit stops, like they have slower pit crews and things like that. So great run for the Rick Ware cars, and certainly I think they benefited from circumstances, because early on in the race when teams were running hard, before they realized all the tire issues, they were not running anywhere near the top 15, right?
Right, so, right, yeah.
It was a little bit of circumstance, but they made the most of it. Well, they didn't quite make the most of it, but they made almost the most of it. Two top 20s for a Rick Ware in the same race may not have been done ever outside of a super speedway and or a road course, I would guess. I don't know for sure, though. I haven't looked into that.
I'm pretty sure that's right, because I know that was the best. It was like the only top 20 finish for Rick Ware at a non-super speedway race in the next gen era, I think. I could be wrong. I was looking up stats earlier today and now it's all messed up. But I know Haley tied their best at a short track, finishing 17th there. So great run for those two. Looking a little further down in the finishing order, Joey Logano with another bad race, finished 22nd. His teammate, Ryan Blaney, you know, we talked about him extensively on the live stream that we did for DFS. Heading into Sunday's race, kind of shit the bed. You know, that car was the best in practice and everything. And, you know, he led, where is Blaney? He finished 16th. He led 14 laps, sixth in stage one. And that's, you know, just completely not very good at all. Austin Cindric, another guy, another bad finish. Tyler Reddick and Bubba Wallace ran into issues. Noah Gregson ran into an earlier issue, as did William Byron. All those guys finished, you know, well deep in the field.
Yeah, another one that was interesting to me was Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is moving forward, getting towards that top 10 before his problems arose as well. He got into a wreck. I don't know what exactly happened on that wreck. They showed a replay, and it kind of just looked like somebody squeezed into him, and he got squeezed, and his tires did their thing, and it was just a weird one. I couldn't really tell what happened there with Ricky, but he was running strong as well, and so just kind of a wild day. It was a lot to keep track of. You know, we had that early wreck where was it Zane Smith just plowed into I forget who it was that spun out in that early wreck. And Zane Smith had the old, what they call the arc brakes, but I mean, he couldn't really do anything about it. He was unsighted by a car in front of him. Then he took down to like the apron. And by the time he's down on the apron and the car is right in front of him, he has nowhere to go. It was Tyler Reddick. That's what it was. The early spin for Tyler Reddick, which, you know, bad day for Tyler Reddick. 30th place finish was basically two laps down right off the bat. And, with a damaged car, was never able to recover.
So Zane Smith has finished 35th or 36th in three of the last four races. His best finish over that span, 29th at Phoenix. I'm just noting this because we know that Zane Smith is talented and we know that those Spire cars have decent speed. When they are running this bad, people are not going to be picking him in DFS. So just keep an eye out for the right time to strike on Zane Smith, because he's not going to have this bad luck forever. Just same with Joey Logano. Yeah. So something noteworthy there. Looking at the rest of the finishing order, Michael McDowell with another strong finish this year. You know, he's picking up right where he left off last year. Three top 15s in the first five races. Just always seems to have decent speed. So it's going to be fun seeing what he can do at COTA this weekend. I know we'll get to that a little bit later. As far as Bristol, though, you know, any other takeaways, I guess, or surprises that you have from that race?
I wouldn't really say any takeaways. I mean, we have no idea, like you said, how this Bristol race is going to impact the next Bristol race. Are there going to be changes? It'll be nighttime. Are they going to go back to PJ1? Like, is NASCAR going to react to this, or overreact or underreact?
Yeah.
We have no idea. So it's just one of those spots where, honestly, I had no clue. And I had no clue coming in. You know, I was, even with Bristol just the way it was now, I was just a little hesitant with, you know, some of the body changes, some of the legacy going to Toyota, night to day, all that stuff. So I was a little hesitant even just going into Bristol. Plus, you know, I thought the odds were all overall relatively fair going into practice and qualifying. And then after practice and qualifying, we see Blaney just kind of smoke the field, and Ross looked really good and then was just awful in the race, you know, in practice and then awful in the race. Just like, man, should have trusted my gut on this race and toned it down a little with the betting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same there. Like I walked away with a tiny loss and I'm happy about that. I'm ready to move on to Coda and go on. Like, you know, it's one of those weeks where just take your L and go, because I will say it was an extremely fun race to watch, though. Like, I would watch that race a million times out of a million times.
Absolutely. Oh yeah.
And I was watching the live odds as the race was going on, and it was just crazy to see those things change. Like, it was almost like it almost reminded me of a super speedway race on Bristol. Like, that's how crazy that this race got. And that's just, I don't know if I like it or not. Like, I liked watching it, but I don't know if I like it as a legitimate race. But I will say this, I am so glad that was not a dirt race. That is the best thing NASCAR could have done. Yeah. And, you know, another great race to start this season. You tweeted out the other day, we're on pace for the best NASCAR season ever. Like, these first six races, five races have been insane. Like, just this string of races have been insane, because even Phoenix, for what it was good. And that's probably the worst race on this so far.
Either Daytona or Phoenix was the worst race. And that's saying a lot when both of those were still really good, you know? I really enjoyed Phoenix, honestly. I thought that was a really good race. And I might say Daytona was the worst race of the year so far. And it's the Daytona 500. It's never a bad race. So, you know what I mean? So it's just one of those things where we've had a lot of awesome races. NASCAR has made a lot of great decisions. Goodyear has, even though, you know, obviously we had a tire issue here, we don't know if that's a Goodyear thing, because it was the same compound as last time. Mm-hmm. Could have been a track thing. It could have been a temperature thing. It could have been a setup thing with all these teams thinking they could run more camber or caster or tire pressure. So we have no idea, because obviously the tire problems got less and less as the race went on, as drivers managed them, but also maybe teams were able to do things with the pressures or various things. So it's been a great season. We've had a lot of entertainment, and if this keeps up, I think this will clip potentially 2011 as the best NASCAR season of the, you know, of the 2000s for sure.
Mm-hmm. Five races in, five different winners. Martin Truex Jr., Kyle Larson are now atop the points when it comes to the points standings. I don't know where I was going with that. Ty Gibbs is in third. He's the only driver with four top tens through the first four races. Ryan Blaney slips down to fourth. Denny Hamlin rounding out the top five when it comes to points. Ty Gibbs is going to win, and it's going to be soon. And I know we say this every week, but I'm excited to talk about COTA because Ty Gibbs is a pretty good road course racer. I think he can win this weekend. And I'm so excited to get to COTA. But first, we need to talk about the point standings. Like I said, Larson's up top. Truex tied. Both have 185 points. Interesting, though, that Truex has 14 less stage points than Larson, even though they have the same amount of overall points. Going a little bit further down, checking out any major surprises here. John Hunter Nemechek sitting 15th in points, ahead of Kyle Busch, ahead of Michael McDowell, ahead of Bubba Wallace. That's noteworthy.
Yeah.
Because we haven't really
John Hunter Nemechek. John Hunter Nemechek, though, it's interesting. He has no, like, absolute stinkers. You know, every finish 25th or better. But at the same time, he's only had two good finishes, 1-6, 1-7, everything else between 21st and 25th. So, but that's the new NASCAR, right? Like, we're at the stage where anything can happen in any race. And as long as you're avoiding the absolute shit clunkers, you're in line to at least be borderline on the playoff point standings, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, you look at, like, just for example, Daniel Suarez, who has a win this year. That's his only top 10 of the season. He only has 9 more points than John Hunter Nemechek. Like, that's just crazy to look at. Like, I know we talk about the consistency and how much people hated it, you know, with the Matt Kenseth years, with Ryan Newman making it to the Final Four, but proof's in the pudding. We only have, you know, it's only five races in, but man.
John Hunter Nemechek's ahead of his teammate, Eric Jones, right? So that's noteworthy. He's ahead of Bubba Wallace, and Bubba Wallace and John Hunter Nemechek are one stage point apart. So that means John Hunter Nemechek has 16 more points from other various means. And again, it's just avoiding the shit stinkers, right? Bubba Wallace actually has two top fives and JHN has none. But Bubba Wallace also has a 29th and a 35th, whereas we mentioned with John Hunter Nemechek, his worst is a 25th. So I think that's where a lot of that is made up, is avoiding the really bad days.
Mm-hmm. Ryan Preece finally had a good race there at Bristol, ended up finishing 14th. He is still 34th in points, but now above Zane Smith, who's 35th in points. He has 41 points through five races, averaging just over 8 points per race. Not very good at all for Zane Smith. No. Yeah, let's see here. Other than that, are you surprised we have five different winners through the first five races?
No, not
especially
at all.
Since it's five different track types. You know, we've now
not
had,
surprised at all. Well, I will say the one thing that's interesting: Denny Hamlin has led the most laps each of the last two races. So, and it's even funnier because it was tied with Tyler Reddick, I think, at Phoenix for the most laps led. So they both have the most laps led at Phoenix, at least according to Wikipedia, which I'm looking at right now. Denny Hamlin, I think that's just a notable fact how much he's led this year. Obviously, you know, people were like, well, Todd Gilliland led a bunch at Daytona, Atlanta, but those are Daytona, Atlanta. But once we've gotten away from that, I mean, Denny led a little bit at Las Vegas. He led a lot at Phoenix. He led a lot at Bristol. So I'm not surprised we have five winners in five races, but there's definitely a scenario where Denny Hamlin has multiple wins right now.
Yeah, so Denny Hamlin's led at least 10 laps in every single race this year. I did not realize that until I just pulled it up. Could you make the argument that he's the best driver to start out this season?
Yeah, I think Denny Hamlin has been the best driver to start out this season. I think second, honestly, has been Ty Gibbs.
Yeah,
maybe,
I would agree with that.
Maybe Blaney.
Blaney's kind of lucked into his finishes, though, or he's gotten there at the end. He's not running up front. Yeah,
but I would say Ty Gibbs has been the second best driver this year. And if you throw in the Clash, maybe Ty Gibbs, even though Denny Hamlin won the Clash, Ty Gibbs actually maybe has been the best driver this year. you know, if we were to include the Clash, because Gibbs dominated that race.
Yeah. End story, though, five Toyotas in the top nine in points. I don't think it's too crazy to say that they have the dominant. They are the dominant manufacturer right now. You know, and I know it's a little bit recency bias because we got Phoenix and Bristol and they just kicked the shit out of everybody there. But Toyota has all the speed right now. And I expect them to have it here this weekend at COTA as well. It really makes you question, though, what the Chevys are going to do, because the Chevys have been very good at COTA.
Yep.
And I know can you tell I'm chomping at the bit to get to COTA?
I can tell. By the way, if you're watching our podcast on YouTube, you see me looking over. It's because my Virginia Cavaliers are playing right now in the NCAA tournament in the first four here for that play-in game. And they're getting the shit kicked out of them, but I still can't help but glance over every once in a while to see if they've closed the gap. And no, it's just getting worse. So, but I gave up on this team a long time ago, but I still have to have it on and watch, you know. So, but yeah, you're chomping at the bit to get to COTA. We still have, you know, whine about it. We still have eventually 36 for 36, but we just talked about the point standings. Real quick, anything as far as like futures bets you interested in, you know, make the Final Four, make the playoffs, win the championship type bets? Because for me, I got, you know, I'm not normally one that does these, but I got nothing right now.
I really don't.
In like a Ty Gibbs or anything?
No, because I feel like they're pricing Gibbs correctly. Like, they're not sleeping on Ty Gibbs right now. Like, you know, sometimes they do. The only futures bet I made was I did bet Christopher Bell after Phoenix, just because it was Phoenix and just because that car was so good. And he was sitting at either 10 to 1 or 12 to 1. And I bet it. Pulling up green flag speed rankings through the first five races, Denny Hamlin, number one, average ranking of 2.6. Can you guess who's number two?
I have no idea. Chris Buescher?
Martin Truex Jr.
Nice.
3.4. That kind of
just always feels
me.
Like a Buescher always feels like a sneaky, like, oh shit, I didn't know he was doing that type thing. That's why I guessed him, because he was good at Bristol. Obviously, he looked worse than Ross in practice, but was better than Ross on the race. So, you know, just one of those guys that always seems to be a little sneaky, sneaks up on you. I'm a little curious in these Ty Gibbs futures. I'm seeing 22 to 1 for pretty much everywhere. FanDuel 22 to 1, DraftKings 22 to 1, Caesars 22 to 1, and Caesars has to make the championship four plus 475, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14th among all drivers. And we think he's been the second best driver this year, maybe.
Okay, I did not realize he was that long for a chance. Yeah. I thought he was in like the 16 to 18 range. Maybe I didn't look at them close enough.
I don't want to do it. I don't think he's a championship driver, but with our format, all he has to do is make the four and then be the best in one race. And he has been the best in one race. And that was, you know, the Clash. He arguably was the best at Phoenix, other than, you know, obviously once Christopher Bell got his track position and flew off, but Ty Gibbs was arguably the second best at Phoenix, which is where the championship race is. It's not inconceivable that he's a champion at 22 to 1 or makes the championship four at plus 475. I don't think that last round sets up great for him with Las Vegas, Homestead, and Martinsville, which is my biggest hesitation.
Yeah, that's what I pulled up here. I wanted to see how he ran at, you know, he's 18th at both Martinsville races last year, and that's despite starting second in the fall. Did finish top 10 in both stages, so that's kind of noteworthy.
That said, you know, he dominated the Clash, which may be the best comp for Martinsville.
Right? Seventh at Homestead last year.
Yeah.
And then Vegas.
It's certainly conceivable, as long as he keeps his nose clean in all three races, he's fine. Because Vegas is Vegas. We already ran there. He looked fine.
He's fifth at Vegas.
And, you know, in the Xfinity series, if I go to Ty Gibbs and check out Martinsville, he has a dominant win at Martinsville in the Xfinity series. And the other time he raced at Martinsville in the Xfinity series, I should say his four starts, but his second year, he led the most laps in both Martinsville races, won one of the two. And then in his first year, I mean, his third race ever in the Xfinity Series was Martinsville. He finished fourth. And then he had a clunker, 27th. I'm sure something happened there. But Martinsville's not a bad track for him. So maybe I'm not high enough on Ty Gibbs in that final round.
I'll tell you what. I think I like that to make the final four at plus 475.
I think I do.
Here's
too.
Why. Round of 16, he can win Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
Round of 12, he finished fourth at the Charlotte Roval last year.
Mm-hmm.
He could potentially he could run top five at Kansas. He could potentially win or run top five at the Roval. And then we just talked about the three races. I think he's going to be very solid in all three races of the round of eight.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't hate the plus 475. And if he gets a win, how much shorter does that get?
Yeah, I think we've got to take him before he gets a win.
If you believe in Ty Gibbs, I think now's the time to take Ty Gibbs at plus 475 to make the final four.
Yeah, I'm doing it. I'm taking it. And you know I hate betting futures.
Live bet right here on Stacking Denny's.
Ty Gibbs to make the final four plus 475.
Yeah.
I'd like the championship at 22-1 at that point, right? I mean, take 5-1, multiply that by four, that's 20-1. And we're getting 22. And there's a chance he could be the favorite at Phoenix once we get there. He was arguably the second or third best car at Phoenix earlier this year.
Is Caesars the only app that offers to make the final four?
Bet Rivers might. ESPN might. I don't know. I have to look. Let me pull up ESPN. I don't think they do, but I'm pretty sure Bet Rivers does. But
Bet Rivers usually does. I'm
right. Good luck getting anything down there, you know?
I've never had an issue with Bet Rivers. And they also connect, Ballybet just copies their lines. So.
Mm-hmm.
Ballybet is okay. Here we go.
Yeah, right now I don't see any of the extra bets at BetRivers. I'm gonna check. Oh wow,
they got qualifying odds up for Coda. BetRivers does.
BetMGM has top four, and Gibbs is 20 and plus 450 for top four. 20 to win, okay. 450 for top. So Caesars actually has the better line on Gibbs on both. Yeah. Well.
Okay.
I'm in at plus 475 and very strongly considering 22-1 for the championship. I never thought I would say that this year. I definitely was on his over on wins. I was really excited to give that out on the Running Hot podcast where we do our season preview. But then he went out and kicked the shit out of everybody in the clash, and all of a sudden those odds dropped like crazy. So I couldn't give over half a win on Ty Gibbs at all, unfortunately.
Right. I'm throwing 20 bucks on Gibbs to make the final four.
Yeah, I'm in for a unit. I mean, if I'm going to bet some futures, I'm not going to bet small. If I'm going to invest some money, I better invest a substantial amount. So I'm betting a full unit on Ty Gibbs to make the championship four at plus 475.
This is what's funny is how much we've talked so much shit about Ty Gibbs on this podcast, but
yeah.
This podcast is quickly turning into a Ty Gibbs fan because
I know. I hate
it. He's fucking good. Like, I hate to say it.
We know he's always been fucking talented as hell. He's just been a little shit. But
yeah.
Maybe one of the best things that's happened to him is now he's running every day with or talking every day with team meetings every day with Denny Hamlin, Martin Truex Jr., who they have their own whininess to them, but they're not ones that are going out there fighting and, intentionally slamming drivers and stuff like that. So, especially Christopher Bell, you know, he gets a little whiny too, but he doesn't do dirty stuff either. So I think the best thing that's happened for him is having a couple years of seasoning with those guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, you know, is surprising overall. Cause you know, Joe Gibbs Racing, we've talked about that before. They definitely have the tendency to whine, but not really get out of line. If that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
They'll talk shit.
They'll whine about it.
Yeah. But perfect segue.
Exactly.
Perfect segue to this week's whine about it. And we didn't even talk before this episode of whether you had anything. I'm not sure if you do or not.
Honestly, I do. So I'll start. I'll go ahead.
Okay.
This week I have the Luvabella Red Blend. You can see I've already drank a lot of it. I may have already done this a week or two ago on the pod. I don't remember, but it's March Madness. This is one of my busiest weeks of the year for work. Super Bowl, March Madness, Daytona 500 weeks, and they're all like within a couple months of each other. So I realized I forgot a glass, so I'm just going to drink it straight out of the bottle for my sip of the Luvabella Red Blend. So a little ASMR style. Probably can't hear that, but it's a very good red blend. It's lighter. Not my favorite style of red wine because it's a lighter red blend, but for a lighter red blend, excellent quality, amazing taste. I would gladly drink this any day. You know, it's like you love the Purple Rain. It's in that vein of Purple Rain. No rhyming intended, but that's how it turned out. It's really good. So no, my whine about it is just me. I was just pissed with myself for overdoing it on Bristol. And I told myself all week, not going to go too crazy. I talked about it here on Stacking Denny's, talked about it on Running Hot, how, you know, even on Running Hot, I was given out of my four picks that I give out in turns 1, 2, 3, and 4. I got out two leans because I was like, I don't know. But then I go to see practice. I'm like, fuck, I got to smash all these bets. And I was like, my model showed so much value. And honestly, had I think the race been like a normal Bristol race, I would have been okay with it. But holy hell, this turned into an absolute shit fest. And I should have just listened to myself. We didn't know it was going to happen, even though we kind of did. And the thing that got me is I kind of convinced myself that, like, well, Bristol, even though it changes, it doesn't really change. Like, everybody who's good here is good here. But I never foresaw these circumstances, ever. And yeah, I won my Brad Keselowski top forward. And I know you and I talked about this. I'm not like hating on the fact that you won Brad Keselowski top forward or I won that. I just don't feel great about it. I actually feel like had I known this was going to be a tire management race, I would have bet Keselowski top forward anyway. But I feel like my analysis was wrong of why I won it. You know what I mean? I didn't win it because I was betting on his speed at Bristol. I essentially won it because he was better at managing the tires. He's still at speed, and I don't feel bad about that. Yeah, but
and I think that's where we were disagreeing because, like, he was top three in green flag speed and average running position. Like, there was no
doubt but a lot that of that was the end. In my head. A lot of that was the end, though, where the tire management came into play. Because before that, he mostly, and I went through the lap by lap data, he was for the first half of the race top forward almost none of it. It was all the second half of the race where he was top forward when it became the tire management race.
He also started 19th, though.
Sure, I get that. But he wasn't as fast then either, if you look at like lap times and flags and stuff. So it's just one of those things where, I mean, like Chris Buescher straight up just passed him, just blew the doors off him in the first half of the race.
Yeah, Buescher was stupid fast to start that race.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm annoyed with myself for going overboard when I wanted to be a little more controlled. But once I saw practice, I didn't see any indications, just like none of the teams, none of the drivers like saw any like severe indications of it. Otherwise, they all would have been talking about it going into the race, but nobody was.
Right.
So wake up Sunday, my model's showing value on this, that, the other, and the other thing. And I'm betting on pretty much everything. And, if there had been any inkling of tire issues, I would not have, but didn't have that. So just annoyed. I had a feeling all week, and you know it, like I'd been talking about it. I just was a little nervous. I was very confident about Blaney and super happy after practice and qualifying. And then I don't even know what happened in the race, but like that, and that's the thing. Like it didn't feel like a race where I don't feel bad about my handicapping because I handicap based off of not what we saw. But at the same time, then I'm annoyed with my handicapping because of what we saw, you know, it's just that
it was super speedway. Like it was, we didn't, there was so much that we didn't know.
Remember we did the show, the DFS show that morning. And somebody was like, you know, I was saying, I think people misinterpret when, you know, I'm like, well, maybe Kaz Grala in DFS only because we're talking about like three mega dominators and you can play these super cheap guys who finish 28th. And so somebody was like, Kaz Grala for a top 10. And I'm like, no, why would you ever bet? That's the worst bet you could make. Turns out that wasn't the worst bet you could make.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure you live bet him to win, didn't you?
I did. Well, I mean, how could you not live bet anybody at 500-1 when he's running seventh?
Yeah.
Right. Like all it takes is a couple late cautions and the guys in front to stack up and he wins, even if he's not the fastest or a nailing a restart or something. If he happened to be in that position late, you know, it was one of those things where I ended up betting him to win because why the fuck not? But
right,
you know, a normal and that's what we talked about though. Like at the beginning, when the first half or third of the race, when things were actually based off of speed because drivers were going balls to the wall before they realized they had all these tire issues, Kaz Grala was nowhere near. And I know they started further in the back, but he wasn't like really moving up and stuff. You know, so we could really get like the, for me, the handicapping is like what happened in the first third of the race before everybody started managing their tires. That's what I was handicapping on. And it turns out we needed to handicap the last two thirds of the race where people were managing their tires. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One of those weird situations. So just whining about myself, Why don't I listen to my gut? Why don't I listen to myself more? Partly one, because betting's fun. And two, like if that doesn't happen, I'm probably pushing an edge, right? Like I'm probably pushing an edge on some of these things. And it just didn't play out like that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to keep drinking from the bottle.
Exactly. So you mentioned, shout out to Luvabella Winery first. Great sponsor for this podcast, Brew Kettle and their beers. I got the sweet rosé this week.
Nice. That's a good one.
Yeah. I'm interested to see how this tastes because I've been drinking the Sunny D Hard Seltzer. That's been my drink of choice tonight. So, we'll switch it up a little bit. So, two sweet drinks. So, this shouldn't be awful. But mine's going to, you know, we talked about practice and what we saw in practice and how that translated to the race and how we didn't know it. And this is going to kind of continue on from my whine about it last week. You know, last week I complained about why they split up practices like they do because they said it was because of TV time and being able to interview people. You know how we would have known that there would have been tire issues this week?
How?
If we would have had one fucking practice session and everybody would have been able to go for 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
We would have known exactly what to expect. So
yeah,
I'm going to bitch again about these stupid groups in practice. I know it gives us an edge with betting. I know there's like the stupid ass reason they do it, but I'm still going to complain. I don't like them.
Let me ask you this, because we've been by and large, not 100%, but by and large, pretty happy with the decisions NASCAR has made this year. Is this a NASCAR is not making good decisions whine about it? Because I agree with you. If we had a 50-minute practice session, we would have figured this out.
To me, there has to be another reason that they're doing these groups. They can't be just the TV thing, but I don't know what it would be because it's not like there was ever issues. And if there, it's not like there was, it was rarely an issue where like there was a wreck that took out multiple cars.
Mm-hmm.
Like we don't get practice at super speedways. And so I just don't like, just have a normal practice session, go back to normal practice session. That's all I'm asking. Yes.
I agree with you. I 100% agree with you. That said, you know how we had that, or I guess Denny Hamlin and some other drivers, team owners, et cetera, had the discussion of like, well, if you go to higher horsepower, it's not going to cost you more. You know what will cost you more? Chewing up five sets of tires in practice based off what we just saw. So like, and I saw tweets during the race, like, well, we may as well go to 950 horsepower because if that, you know, the tires that have been chewed up at Bristol are going to cost more than the increase in horsepower.
that was
funny.
Yeah. You know, one more thing about that though. And I know a lot of teams didn't use that final set of tires. They adjusted well, but that race could have definitely ended badly if teams ran out of tires. Like that could have been real bad. Cause we already had five people on the lead lap at the end. That was the total number of cars that finished on lead lap.
We saw them putting on their qualifying tires and then a pair of stickers from earlier in the race scuffs from earlier in the race. Like we saw teams reusing tires that they would normally never do just to avoid running out. But you're right. Had teams not been able to manage it and had Goodyear not given an extra set, we could have. I kind of didn't want Goodyear to give an extra set. I was like, don't give him another set. Make him manage this shit. The good ones will do it and the bad ones won't, you know?
So there was an unconfirmed question or statement on Hamlin's podcast that the extra set was from last year's race, and that yeah,
that's what it was.
They did not wear like these new ones did, even though it was the same tire compound and everything. Which then it would, you know, that just adds an extra layer, because then that would be a Goodyear issue. If it's supposedly the same tire, but they don't do the same thing in the exact same conditions, then it's a Goodyear issue. But I don't know if they'll ever...
It's interesting because, you know, like we didn't get an inkling of it after practice. Drivers did mention that they weren't sure if it was rubbing in right or if it didn't mesh with the resin or this, that, or the other. You know, Denny Hamlin made the, like, somebody pee-pee on the tires comment. Mm-hmm. Looking back on that, that's like, you know, the Twitter red flags thing. But we didn't know right. it at the time. We just thought he was, you know, being like, wow, that didn't behave like we expected. Not like, shit, we're going to have to pit every 40 laps for tires.
Yeah, that was like, I saw the comment. I didn't think twice about it. I'm like, oh, Hamlin's just complaining. And you know, we got some tire fall off. Good. We have tire fall off. But I would have never, ever thought it would have been like that.
No, not at all. And the other thing I'll whine about, okay, I've got a second one. People saying this was Indy 2008. This was not Indy 2008.
Nope, absolutely.
Not at all. Indy 2008 was an absolute complete disaster, shit show, fuck fest of a race. This was a good race. Teams were able to manage their tires. The problem with Indy is you're going 200 miles down or down the straightaway. So if you're trying to manage your tires there, then you're all of a sudden you're going 170 down the straightaway at the end, and it's not really doing it much better. Plus the tires there were falling off while still relatively at the same like mileage pace. They were falling off to where it was dangerous. Whereas here it's not as dangerous, and it's like you come in a pit and you just manage it. It was a lot easier to manage here. It wasn't going to create as many, like, we weren't seeing like full on blowouts after the first couple times. We were more just seeing like, okay, now it's quartered, I got to bring it in type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Cause the whole end of the race ran fucking green. That's not what they had to throw competition caution laps every 10 laps for the 2008 Indy race, the Brickyard 400. We didn't get competition cautions. We didn't get competition cautions for that whole last stint of Bristol. We ran over 100 laps green to the end.
Yeah, and I think people were just making that comparison because that's the closest thing we've had to that.
But it's not. We've had other races with tire issues. That's the whole point. Like, anytime there's tire issues, people want to be Indy 2008 when it's not. It's not. It wasn't even close. Wasn't even close.
Is that the end
that's
of your
my backup
line about it?
That's my backup line about it. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to move us on. Again, shout out Luvabella Winery. Make sure you check them out, luvabella.com. Brew Kettle, make sure you check them out. Follow those companies on their social medias. We are getting into COTA, the Echo Park Texas Grand Prix.
Automotive something, right?
The Echo Park Automotive Grand Prix at
Texas.
Circuit of the Americas.
At Circuit of the Americas, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, man. Giving me flashbacks to, what was it? Oh, Indy. Indy always had a super long.
I just want to get back to the Bushy McBushface 400 or something.
Yeah. Tyler Reddick won this race last year. Race before that was Ross Chastain. And then in 2021, Chase Elliott. So three races at COTA, three different winners. I think that first one at COTA was... that was the rain race, wasn't it? That one was an embarrassment on NASCAR.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's – COTA's had a interesting history in NASCAR. We had the rain race. Then we had the Ross Dinger, whatever, all that stuff. Then we had last year's just – absolutely crazy ending with like eight restarts at the end or something. There, yeah, it wasn't eight, but it feels like eight restarts. Felt like it took like 3 hours to complete the last 10 laps plus overtime of the race. That's COTA for you, apparently. Yeah.
Apparently, and you know, we're getting another race, fourth race here, third in the next gen car. Tyler Reddick, the favorite this week, no surprise there. Chase Elliott, pretty much across the board, as second favorite. Then you got Byron Bell, Ty Gibbs, Kyle Larson, AJ Allmendinger. Here's the thing, though. there is SVG's running this race. He's running this race. He's running the 16 this week. AJ Allmendinger is running the 13. Kamui Kobayashi is running for 23.11. And I am very interested. I want to start off talking about SVG because you know what? You know who's been arguably the fastest car here at COTA over the three races? Trackhouse Racing's. Nope. Trackhouse Racing's. Ross Chastain.
Yes, Ross, for sure. But he's not. SVG's not in the Trackhouse car. That's why I was like, AJ Allmendinger.
Why was that? Wait. Why was I thinking he was in Trackhouse? What am I?
He's running the 16. That's colleague.
I know I just said that, but why was I thinking he was in fucking Trackhouse?
That's why I was so confused, because Allmendinger, obviously, for 2 years in a row, has been really good here. So that's why I was a little like, oh, I guess you're just mentioning Allmendinger.
What the hell was I thinking? Okay, let's rerun that back. I don't know what the hell I was thinking there. So yeah, SVG, you know, Allmendinger has been fast here. He has not had the finishes really. He had a fifth here in the first race, 33rd in 2022, 34th last year, but did finish third in stage one.
Yeah, I mean, 2022, he finished 33rd, but he was going to win the race if Ross didn't punt him back, right?
Yep, exactly.
He went from first to 33rd in the last corner.
Yeah. I hate talking about that race because I was winning so much money on that last lap.
Yeah, but I had Ross 40-1, so I was happy.
Yeah, I had that too, and that's what saved my day, but I was crushing it before.
Would have been even more, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, we look at these races at COTA, and there are a few drivers that just seem to have this place figured out. Obviously, Tyler Reddick's very good here. Chase Elliott's been very good here. But a couple of somewhat surprising names, at least one. You know, Chastain's been very good here. Three races, fourth or better in every single race. He got that win in 2022. Has not started well. He's started 12th, 16th, and 20th, so he's not starting up front and staying up front. Another guy, and I really like this guy this week, and feel free to tell me why I'm wrong.
Alex Bowman, right?
Alex fucking Bowman.
Yeah. I know you, man. We've known each other a long time. I know exactly who you're going to go to there.
Yeah, so to the point where Bowman opened top 10 at plus 125, top 5 at, I think, plus 475 or 500. Mm-hmm. And then top 3 at 7. It's somewhere of those numbers. I forget the top 5 numbers off. I know that. But top 10 number is correct. I'm willing to bet all of those right now. And I have I've held myself back. The only bet that I have made heading into COTA weekend as of Tuesday night, we're recording this on Tuesday night, I bet Reddick when he opened at 6-1 at Superbook because I felt like that was the best number we're going to get him all weekend. Toyota has all the speed right now. Reddick's the best road course racer, and you know my mantra when it comes to this next-gen car. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Tyler Reddick won this race last year, dominated the shit out of it. I see that happening again. So I was fine to take him 6-1. Maybe not the best, you know, overall value, but I'm fine with it. I wanted to have Reddick action, and it did. It's down to 5-1. Some places have him as low as 4-1.
Yep.
But I feel like there is quite a bit of value here with some guys that have a good history. How much are you concerned this week with Chevy, though? Because two of those guys, Chastain, Alex Bowman, hell, even SVG and Allmendinger, they're all in Chevys. Are we concerned that Chevy isn't going to have as much speed as maybe the Fords and the Toyotas?
It's certainly possible. I mean, we've got the new body, which should, in theory, help Ford, who really struggled last year overall, I think, on road courses. Toyota got better compared to 2 years ago. So if you're analyzing Toyota drivers, you basically have to throw out 2 years ago. Remember, like,
right.
Toyota's bad at road courses 2 years ago. They sucked all year. All year. Yep. So you can't really fairly compare them, which means you do have to just essentially downgrade Chevy and Ford a little bit just off that. Because if you're sitting here and like, well, Alex Bowman was third this year and Alex Bowman was second the year before, well, like, would he have been if Toyota didn't have the absolute shit brick of a year they had 2 years ago? I don't know. Probably not. But then we saw, you know, Tyler Reddick was Tyler Reddick last year with Toyota. Martin Truex Jr. back to winning road course races now that Toyota got their shit figured out. And all indications are Toyota's even better this year. So, yeah, I'm a little concerned for Chevy. I wouldn't necessarily say Ford as much, but Ford, obviously, had great results last year. You know, Michael McDowell, Chris Buescher has always been good here. Obviously, the Penske guys, especially Austin Cindric. And to be fair, Austin Cindric is a guy I don't even know if you mentioned. Finished eighth here in 2022. Finished Cindric sixth here in 2023. And in the 2021 race, when it was dry, he was awesome. When it was wet, he sucked because he always sucks in the wet. But Cindric has been great at COTA. So, yeah, you might be able to downgrade Chevy a little bit, but not because Chevy's gotten worse. It's just because the competition's gotten better.
Yeah. So I feel like there are a lot of these variables, though. You know, Toyota getting better, SVG's in the race, Ty Gibbs getting overall better. And I'm bringing this up because Chris Buescher specifically, yesterday before any odds dropped, I texted my group chat and I'm like, hey, no matter what the odds are, we're betting Chris Buescher top 10 this week. Because you look at Chris Buescher over the last 10 road course races, he has not finished worse than 11th.
Yep.
He always finishes. He's at plus 125, which when I saw that drop, I'm like, holy shit. Like, I like this. Like, he is a lock for a top 10 on road courses. But I have not bet it, and I'm doubting myself right now because of Toyota that much faster, SVG in the race, Allmendinger in the race, you know, kind of pushes Buescher back a little bit. And Buescher has not been super fast at COTA specifically. Yes, he has the finishes, but he's been much faster at other road course races.
I agree with that.
So this is just it adds another wrinkle into the overall analyzation of this race, you know, and whether and what to do with it. And that's what makes this, once again, you love and you hate the early part of this season because you don't know exactly what, like, I've always considered myself a very good second half of the year analyst. Like, once I get the data from the first half of the year and we start visiting tracks second time, we have a ton of data, I can really analyze this stuff well.
Yeah.
First half of the year, there's just a bunch of questions. So are there any, segueing off of that, are there any, you know, outrights that you're seeing value on or any other type of bets that kind of caught your eye earlier here in the week before we've even gotten to practice or qualifying for this? Because it is the first road course race of the season. We don't really know, you know, if teams made some gains on road courses or not, or if anything's going to change from what we saw last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a spot where a lot of guys can win. We haven't even mentioned Chase Elliott.
Right, Chase Elliott.
Right? Like, we William Byron. Haven't even said his name. Or William Byron, obviously. Like, we've mentioned Ross. We haven't even mentioned Kyle Busch, who finished second here last year. We've mentioned Daniel Suarez, who, you know, dominated the first stage here in 2022.
Michael McDowell.
Well, we did mention McDowell, but yeah, exactly. Like, McDowell. So, Ryan Blaney has run great here in the past. It's Chase Briscoe. We haven't named him. I mean, this race could be wide the fuck open. And we're not even talking about some of the young guns. One in particular for me, Zane Smith. Two wins here in the truck series, right? I love Zane Smith this weekend. The problem is, I think everybody else does too. So it's, and you were mentioning, you know, if Zane's having all these bad finishes, people eventually will be off of him. But I don't necessarily think people will be off of Zane Smith this week. They go look at, well, he doesn't run here in the Cup Series. Let's go look at his other series results and see if Zane Smith just kicks ass here. So it's one of those spots where it's ugly. Like, I don't want to just sit here and fade Zane Smith or play Zane Smith. I don't know. It's there's a lot of guys that can do well here, but I think a guy that is going to fly under the radar, honestly, is Austin Cindric. People aren't talking about him right now. If you want to talk about being down on somebody, people are down on Austin Cindric. And I think this is a spot with a new Ford body and his great track history here in the dry. Like top 6, 5, 7, 8 every race in dry conditions. I think this is a decent Austin Cindric spot to bet him for a top 10 finish.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And it kind of, it's a little uncomfortable because it's Cindric and, you know, you don't particularly love it, but he's sitting there at plus 125. Yeah, I don't hate that at all.
I think that honestly might be my favorite bet out there right now. And I don't like it, but I haven't bet it myself, but I think that might be my favorite bet of what's out there right now. I just, again, it's a week, and I think I'll stick to it this time because of March Madness, but a week where I don't love, you know, just betting a whole lot. And at least in this case, I think if we wait until practice and qualifying, see what we got, we're not going to get tires blown out or massive crazy wear left and right out of a surprise, you know? So I think I'll, if I do unload the clip a little bit after practice and qualifying, it'll be more informed, but also we got the stages back with the caution.
Yeah.
So that changes a lot.
That changes strategy. Yeah. And oh man, that is another dumb NASCAR decision. I honestly forgot about that a little bit. I don't know why, but yeah, that's just annoying as well.
And we know SVG, AJ Allmendinger, those guys will be on the winning strategy.
Yeah.
But like, does somebody like a Joey Logano, who is behind in points, start going for points already?
Yeah. Yep.
Daniel Suarez can go for the win. That makes it like Daniel Suarez a little bit more. He can go for the winning strategy. Denny Hamlin can go for the winning strategy. He's already got a win in the bag. Ty Gibbs, it makes me maybe a little bit less like him, but he should be fine on points, so maybe not. But it's these borderline guys that become a little bit harder. And Austin Cindric, for example, himself is a little bit more hesitant for me to pick him for upside when he may have to go for points. Chase Briscoe, similar situation. But there's guys who aren't running for points. Like I said, SVG, AJ Allmendinger. And then guys that already have a win under the belt, Daniel Suarez, Denny Hamlin, who won Phoenix? I already forgot. Christopher Bell. They can all go for wins, right? So it's definitely a situation where if you've got a win under your belt, William Byron, Daytona 500, you can go for the win.
I saw a tweet. Is that the most forgotten Daytona 500 victory ever? Not ever, but definitely in recent memory.
Yeah, like, it's definitely up there. It's definitely up there.
Yeah, when you just how it ended, and then you know we had Atlanta happen the next week. It is so easy to forget that William Byron already has a win this year.
Yeah, that's whoever made that tweet. That's a great tweet. And then you also have the guys like, I don't know, let's say Zane Smith, who has probably no shot of making it on points. He's got to go on the winning strategy, right? Which makes you almost like him more. So.
And yeah, that's also
fun race. Fun race.
It is. It's going to be a fun race. And like, I enjoy these, you know, these strategies. I used to be really good at DFS when it came to road courses, and I've kind of lost my edge. But they are legitimately fun to watch, especially if the broadcast does a good job of explaining all the strategies. Because if you get, you know, all these different ones, like, that's a key point to this as well. Speaking of, shout out to NBC for canning Rick Allen. I don't know if they actually did, but he's out after Lee Diffie is replacing him.
I was surprised you said you didn't like Lee Diffie as much, because he's my favorite play-by-play commentary. He does amazing with the IndyCar broadcasts or IMSA when he does those. He brings such incredible energy. I think he's phenomenal. And this is a little different. Obviously, I'm talking IndyCar, but the only one I really liked, and I think this is probably another slightly controversial one, but I think most people, when they go back and watch the classic CART, which is now IndyCar series races, they liked Paul Page. I loved Paul Page. I thought he and especially Parker Johnstone had a great chemistry in the booth together. It was just the two of them. And then you had like Jan Beekes, Gary Gerald on pit road. Lee Diffie is right up there with them for me. And maybe probably better, because Paul Page was more of a traditional broadcaster lead commentary where you talk about what's happening, but you don't get like fucking excited. But Lee Diffie, just he's so excited. I think the only thing that's, and this is an NBC issue, for IndyCar, it's not a Lee Diffie issue. They have decided because Formula One, because NASCAR has put on all these, you know, I guess Netflix-y type shows and stuff. They're trying to dive in for IndyCar, at least based off what I saw in St. Petersburg, trying to dive in all these drivers' personal lives, trying to get all these storylines out there. And they're missing what the fuck is happening in the race or even in qualifying or practice. Like, there's important things that are happening on track in practice and qualifying that is being missed this year by NBC IndyCar, which has not been being missed in the past. And that's bothering me. But that has nothing to do with Lee Diffie's commentary quality. That's just kind of what he's being assigned to do by the company. But I think Lee Diffie's a phenomenal commentator. And certainly when you compare him to Rick Allen, it's night and day.
Yeah. And I have no reason why I don't like Lee Diffie. That's the thing. Like, I'm not sitting here saying I don't like, I just don't like his commentary. Like, I'm not a huge fan of it, but I have no reason to hate it. Like, there's no, like, Rick Allen, I could create an entire list.
Which commentator do you like? Like, lead commentator in motorsports?
Lead commentator?
Yeah, so, like, Mike Joy, Alan Beswick was doing SRX, Lee Diffie. Like, I thought Alan Beswick, like, people love Alan Beswick, and I do, but he's a little mundane and boring for me. I don't dislike him, but, you know, Rick Allen, Mike Joy, Lee Diffie, Alan Beswick, those are kind of the four guys right now in motorsports commentary in the U.S.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, none of them are like a home run number one for me. I like the other guys better. You know, mm-hmm. I like Dale Jr.'s commentary.
Like, yeah, but those are color commentary, like what we would call color or analyst. Like, you know, I'm talking lead, like play-by-play commentary.
Yeah, I don't know. And maybe it's just that role that I don't like, you know? Maybe I don't like that role because they have to make it about themselves. You know, they are the lead analyst.
Well, I think Lee Diffie is the one who does not make it about himself.
Uh-huh.
Mike Joy, like, I used to love him. Certainly he's gotten older and just worse, and now he's like, you know, keyboard warriors this and whatever. And Rick Allen's Rick Allen, obviously. I like Alan Beswick. I don't think he makes it about himself at all. I think Alan Beswick does a very good job, but I also think he hasn't been paired up with the best people when mm-hmm. he's been doing SRX or even in the last few years he did NASCAR. And I have no problem with Alan Beswick. If it was him, that'd be great. But Lee Diffie to me is such a natural motorsports commentator, lead commentator. He narrates what's happening and he tries to drive the storylines. And it's not that it's about him. It's that he's excited. You can tell he loves it. He has a passion for this. Whereas, and you know, Mike Joy, it's not that he doesn't have a passion for it. It's just that he's getting older and B, he's getting more wrapped up in the, like, well, the TV production side of things. To me, Lee Diffie is pure passion and joy when I hear him commentating.
Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, maybe I'll come around on him. I would say Mike Joy probably is my top, though, the more I'm thinking about it. Like, I do enjoy Mike Joy.
I don't. I used to. I used to love Mike Joy. But there was that.
And this is just comparing him to, like, Rick Allen. Like, sure. I'm saying
I agree with that. 100% compared to Rick Allen. I just soured on Mike Joy with the whole, like, keyboard warrior thing. And there's a period of time, and it still is happening, where he just, like, forgets names or commentating on the wrong car. You know, he's obviously getting older, and mm-hmm. everybody gets older. It's going to happen to me. It's going to happen to you. And we're going to not be as sharp with the things we talk about. But at the same time, that is a factor in the enjoyment of the race.
Right. Yeah. Overall, though, good news that Rick Allen is gone.
I agree with that.
that is just, I couldn't believe it. I didn't think he'd ever get out of there, but that day will come soon enough this year. So getting back to Coda, though, are you, you know, like I said, Reddick's the favorite. Do you see any reason why anybody else would be the favorite heading into this race weekend?
No, I don't. Reddick should be the favorite, 100%. I think, especially given the Toyota, the way things are mm-hmm. going for them, trending upward, I think it's got to be Reddick.
Mm-hmm. Chase Elliott did not run this race last year. Are you surprised that he's sitting there at 8-1? Because I kind of am. You know, obviously it's Chase, and he's very good at road courses. But the fact of the matter is, second at Indy Road Course last year, fifth at Sonoma. It's not really the type of performance that we'd expect out of Chase Elliott. You know, like, because he went on that streak there where he won four in a row at road courses, 6 of 8. You know, he hasn't gotten victory lane since Road America in 2021. That's the last time Chase Elliott won at a road course.
That was the Gen 6 car. He's never won in the next gen car at a road course. And remember, Hendrick, even like he and Hendrick, and we've heard things where they know they had a setup advantage. They found something towards the end of the Gen 6 era that allowed Chase Elliott to just fucking crush. And ever since the next gen era has started, they lost that advantage.
Yep.
They lost that
advantage. He's still good. Don't get me wrong. He's still good.
He's a great road course racer.
But he is not, like, honestly, I'd consider, you know, some of these head to heads, Chase Elliott versus some of these other guys, I would consider betting the other side, depending on who it is.
And let's not forget, he led the most laps at Road America in 2022, first year of the next gen. He led the most laps at Watkins Glen, first year of the next gen car. At that race, he led the most laps at the Roval, first year of the next gen car. So it's not like he sucks at road courses, but the edge is certainly closed. The gap is closed. And he has not won a single road course event in the next gen era. And that's just the reality of the situation. And then, like, we all think Tyler Reddick's the favorite. You add in an Almendinger, an SVG, Martin Truex Jr., Ty Gibbs, Christopher Bell, William Byron, right? Like, there is no Michael McDowell, Daniel Suarez, Ross Chastain, right? Like, there's no reason Chase Elliott should be the price he is, but I think people are finding that, like, super enticing. And I think a few years ago, I would have found that super enticing, but right now, I think that's just kind of fair and maybe slightly not value. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I think he should be about 10. That's where I'm thinking he should be.
I agree.
And so that's where I'm kind of at on it. Like, I think
I almost like Christopher Bell at 10 better than Elliott at 10.
Yeah. And I know Greg Mathurin messaged me. He said he got Bell at 14. And I told him, I'm like, yeah, that's solid. Like, if you like Bell, that's
sure.
The best number you're going to get all week. I'm really interested, though. I've brought him up a couple times. William Byron, because he never really got the finishes at road courses. You look at his first 24 starts at road courses, he had one top five. Then all of a sudden he went out and dominated the shit out of Watkins Glen last year, finished second at the Charlotte Roval. Once again, that's just another one of those examples of a guy that is, you know, if he has excelled up to the next level of road courses, it's pushing all these other guys down. And that's kind of what I'm getting at when I've been talking about, you know, like the Chris Buescher bet, the top 10 bet I was talking about, and all of this, you know, SVG in this race. It's pushing the more of the favorites down a little bit, because these guys don't quite have the history, Ty Gibbs as well, but we know they're good and we know that they're eventually going to get there. So Byron kind of, you know, broke out the last two road course races of the season last year. And you know, certainly Ty Gibbs could do the same thing. He's sitting at 9-1 on BetMGM. You can get him at 12-1 on BetRivers. Once again, I'm not betting Ty Gibbs at 12-1. Like, he still has never won in NASCAR. And I know I keep saying he's going to win soon. But
what about Kyle Larson at 14? We literally haven't mentioned Kyle Larson.
I know.
Remember when he and Chase Elliott were the road course guys and they were battling each other?
Yeah. Man, road courses for Larson last year,
like,
zero top fives.
Yeah, but like right now, it's so tough. There's so many good road course racers. So many. But the class of the field is still Tyler Reddick.
It is. Yeah. Were you surprised, because I was, that McDowell opened at 20?
I didn't even know he opened at 20. This is news to me, but I also have been not really paying attention because of March Madness.
He's still at 20. Like, that one was just a very big surprise to me.
It is surprising, but
am I betting it? No.
Yeah, I'm not.
Like, I'm not jumping to bet McDowell.
The only one I bet is Ty Gibbs because of how good he's looked this year. And, you know, I bet him at 14 when it opened. And I tracked it at 13, I think, because when by the time it had gotten released to other states, the best available was 13. And then some other 14s popped up. So whatever, I don't care. Like, I would have bet him 14, 13, or 12. I know you said you're not betting him at 12, but again, I'm on the Ty Gibbs train, not hopping off it anytime soon if I'm still getting numbers that I'm, you know, feeling good about and showing his value.
Right. One guy, you mentioned him earlier, finished second here last year, Kyle Busch. He's sitting at 18-1. And yep. he just showed more than expected speed on road courses last year, mm-hmm. you know, with RCR. So that's a guy to keep an eye on this week as well. You know, like, I feel like there's some decent value here in this mid-range.
Well, and that this brings me back to my whine about it with Bristol. You were all over Kyle Busch for Bristol, and based off of had the tires not worn out, Kyle Busch may have fucking won the race.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm annoyed with everything, because had we known Bristol was going to be how Bristol was, and Kyle Busch was going to drive the shit off the tires, then he suddenly isn't a good bet. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things yeah. where I thought you made a great bet, but then it doesn't even matter because apparently his tires were fucking horrible all race. And is that a him thing? Is that a whatever? Like, we have no way of knowing. And that's why I was mostly just like, even any bets I won, I don't really care, because even the ones that I thought were good either turned to shit or they were good, but maybe not for the right reasons. But you make a great point. Kyle Busch had a lot of speed at road courses last year.
Yeah, top three in four of the last six.
Mm-hmm.
He's sitting at -120 for a top 10. That might be my favorite bet right now.
See, I thought my favorite bet right now is Austin Cindric for top 10. But
yeah.
Yeah, plus money. But I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, I don't have any strong takes, because I could see 18 drivers finishing top 10.
Right. Yeah.
Like, Bubba Wallace could finish top 10 just off of skill and speed. He's improved at road courses. He's had races where he's been borderline top 10 on speed at road courses. And now if you added Toyota's improvement, what about Eric Jones? What about John Hunter Nemechek? We don't even know what they're going to do. What about Noah Gregson or I wouldn't say Josh Berry. He's not very good at road courses. But like, Noah Gregson could always pop in that 10 car there. There's a lot of unknowns with the young kids. Carson Hocevar. We don't know.
I might end up betting Kyle Busch. He's at -110. I think I like that enough. I don't know, though. Man, like this.
I know.
It is. It's.
I'm not hating on the Kyle Busch bet. I'm just saying I don't know if I love anything.
Yeah. If I had to bet a top 10 bet right now, it'd probably be that. Although, like I said, I do like that Alex Bowman +125. I'm with mm-hmm. you there on the Cindric at +125. Let me parlay these. How about that? Give me Kyle Busch, Cindric, Bowman parlay top 10s.
There you go.
Yeah. What do you think about Kobayashi?
It's an interesting one. He and Ty Gibbs had a little, I think it was those two, had a little entanglement at Indy Road Course last year. So, hard to say. Do I think he'll be better the second time around than the first time? Sure, but how many times have we seen Jenson Button run in supposed Stuart Haas equipment and not really do anything?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I throw him in the Jenson Button mold.
So let's get back to SVG though. Sitting at 16-1, do you think that's a decent bet to make? Because I think if there's going to be one guy that comes out and is fast in practice, qualifies well, and his line definitely gets shorter, one, Tyler Reddick, I fully expect him to reopen after qualifying at like four. But SVG sitting at 16-1, I feel like he's going to get in that 10 or lower range. If you like SVG this week, is now the time to bet him?
Okay, so remember my reservations with AJ Allmendinger last week. I love AJ Allmendinger at Bristol, and I did end up betting him because of what I saw in practice, but it still wasn't amazing at 7-1 or 6-7-1 for a top 10. And then he was not real good in the race.
Yeah.
I think Colleague is down right now.
Yeah.
And I agree. You know, a lot of it I was chalking it to, well, Daniel Hemric sucks. Derek Kraus sucks, right? The equipment is not the issue. It's the drivers. AJ Allmendinger was pretty fucking mediocre at Bristol before obviously he got in an early wreck. And it's tough to gauge off that because he did get an early wreck. So I don't really know. But that, I'm just like, colleague scares me right now. So I don't want to take SVG or AJ Allmendinger at the current prices because I'm scared of colleague right now. And yeah. I'm scared of Chevy right now relative to those other teams changing their bodies supposedly for improvements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking SVG was in Trackhouse because that's what he ran last year. For whatever reason, I was still thinking he was in Trackhouse. But no, yeah, Colleague is not good right now. And if they took even a small step back, I don't care how talented you are with SVG, with Allmendinger, we know how good they are at road courses. That's going to have an effect. You go from, you know, a potential race winner to, you know, mid top 10. And then with a bad strategy or anything going wrong, all of a sudden you're outside the top 10.
Or, you know,
10.
Toyota and Ford making gains. Not only is Colleague getting worse, they're getting worse relative to just the Chevy camp. And then you add in the improvements of Ford and Toyota, potentially, I don't know for sure, but likely for Toyota and potentially for Ford. It's tough for me to get there with SVG and Allmendinger, even if a model might show value on them.
Agreed. Yeah, I was thinking about SVG a lot today, and I had this whole mindset that he was in Trackhouse. That is just brain fart on my part. It happens. Even people that like us that analyze this shit like no other for every single week of the year can have brain farts.
Absolutely.
Let's see here. Any sleepers that you decently like?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like I said, Zane for a top 10, but I feel like a lot of people are on that. Who knows about John Hunter Nemechek?
Best odds right now is 8-1.
Who knows about John Hunter Nemechek, Eric Jones, Bubba Wallace, right? If Toyota's really good, I think all three of them are in play for a top 10. Outside of that, you know, I'm not looking at sleepers to win. I'm more looking at like top 10 sleepers. Todd Gillen.
Yeah.
Harrison Burton. I mean, we saw Harrison Burton and Todd Gillen finish top 10 in the same race with Bubba Wallace. They all finished top 5 in the same race 1 year at Indy when all that shit went crazy at the end there. And we saw what happened at COTA last year, 800 restarts. Like, there's guys that are in play for top 10 finishes for sure. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. had a top 10 at COTA last year.
Yeah.
And he legitimately was fast enough to finish in the top 10. He wasn't a top 10 car, but he was a back half of the teens, which if all of a sudden things get a little wild, is good enough to get you in the top 10. And that's all I'm looking for. Is there guys further down the odds board at that 10 plus range or in, you know, in the case of like Bubba or Eric Jones or John Henry Nemechek, maybe in that 5-6 range for a top 10. So I don't know. I mean, it's so hard to know. It's so hard to know until we see cars on track.
Yeah. Here's a few for you. John Hunter Nemechek sitting at 80-1 for top Toyota.
No. And I know what we did with Bubba Wallace. I know what we did with
Eric
Bubba
Jones.
Wallace. Remember, there were 6 then. Now there's 8.
Eric Jones sitting at 50-1. Who's a little bit better of a road course racer. He finished 9th here in 2022 with Petty. You interested in sprinkling a little bit on 50-1?
Man, it's so hard because like Eric Jones wasn't knock your socks off when he was with Joe Gibbs at road courses. You know what I mean?
Except at Watkins Glen. He was always very good at Watkins Glen.
Faster ones, which of course COTA is a bit faster, but it also has its tight technical sections, which I think hurts him a little bit. Glenn, I always thought was like the fastest, the least technical, a lot of like fast sweeping corners that resemble a little bit more like ovals, outside of the inner loop. And then maybe the, you know, the, the carousel right after that. But a lot of it's just like kind of like indie style corners where you have 90 degree turns or whatever and take things pretty fast. So felt a lot better about Eric Jones at those kind of tracks, but anywhere with a Sonoma tight technical stuff, like it's not his jam. I'm sure my model will end up showing value on those, both of them, JHN and Eric Jones, but I can't bring myself to do it given Tyler Reddick, Martin Truex Jr., Christopher Bell, Ty Gibbs, and Denny Hamlin.
yeah, that is like you need chaos for that to work.
It was different when there were six cars and it was Bubba at 100. I can't with eight cars with Eric Jones or JHN at 80 or 50 or 60. I don't know. It's a little different situation.
Yeah. What do you think about shit?
I think shit stinks.
Ty Gibbs, 6-1, top Toyota.
I don't hate it. I bet I'm 14-1 to win, so I certainly don't hate that. Certainly don't hate that. Weird week.
It is. Kind of just going through some of these odds. By the way, currently looking at...
what about race to go to overtime plus 300?
I like that. Where's that at?
Hasn't last year went to overtime. 2 years ago could have gone to overtime, except it didn't. And 3 years ago it was rain, so they just like cut it off and it didn't go to overtime. So we can't really use that one. But Caesars has race to go to overtime plus 300. They don't have a no side though, which I know Greg was complaining about, but I don't hate the yes side, honestly.
I really don't hate the yes side.
Yeah. I think Greg was complaining about it though at like plus 200, but I think maybe it's been moved to plus 300 now or something. I don't remember exactly. Let me go look at his Twitter here. Plus 250. Oh, no. He was looking at winner stage two wins race. So I'm sure he shut the hell up on that. That's what it was. Ignore me. I don't hate race goes to overtime plus 300. I don't think I necessarily like it. I hate the fact that it's not a two-way market. Why are you not offering a no side? We never get to a potential fair price just based off what the market thinks. Because there's only one side.
Yeah, I like that. I like that overtime bet.
I do too. I think that might be my favorite one.
You got anything else for Coda?
I don't. I guess we have to get to our final two segments here.
Yeah, 36 for 36 and picks to win. My turn to go first. We both shit the bed last week on 36 for 36. I had Noah Gregson, who came up with a whopping 3 points. You had Carson Hocevar, came up with 10. So through five races, I have 96 points, and you have 107. So you got a nice 11-point lead. I'm pulling up quick where we would be in the NASCAR standings. I guess with 96 and 107. So 107, you would be tied with Bubba Wallace and Chase Briscoe for 18th. Mm-hmm. And 96, I would be sitting in 21st, right ahead of Austin Cindric, right behind Eric Jones.
Yeah.
So for those that aren't following along, 36 for 36, you get to pick all 36 chartered race cars. You pick them once and you're done. So definitely brings in the strategy with this type of game. I came in and I was going, I was for sure thinking Alex Bowman. I really like Alex Bowman this week. Bowman is my favorite thing walking in here, but I used him at Las Vegas, so I cannot use him this week. Started looking more into road course data, specifically at COTA, and my mind was made up pretty quickly. I'm going Austin Cindric in that number two.
It's an interesting one. I was definitely considering Cindric. And the other one I'm considering is Tyler Reddick.
I was considering him too, because that is how confident I think that Tyler Reddick is going to win this race.
Where else am I going to use Reddick? Well, Homestead, we only get one race, and it could be probably Larson. Darlington is certainly a spot, but that's like Ross Chastain territory. Like, I'm using Tyler Reddick at a road course, you would think. Right. Yeah. And, well, we don't have Indy road course anymore. At the Correct. Roval, he hasn't exactly been the best. He's been good, but not necessarily the best. AJ Allmendinger won that race last year. So it's tough. You know, like, Shane Van Gisbergen is not penciled in for the Roval. AJ Allmendinger is. So if Colleague is going to be good later in the year, I'd rather save AJ Allmendinger for the Roval. We've got Watkins Glen. What has Tyler Reddick really done at the Glen?
Zero top five.
Exactly. And then Sonoma is certainly not his best road course. So of the road courses, this is Tyler Reddick's best. So I'm going to go Tyler Reddick.
I like that bet, and I like that pick, and I wish I would have done it.
I'm going Tyler Reddick. This is, I think, the spot to use him. Like, this is, it's either here or one of the other road courses or a Darlington or Homestead type race, but we're already penciling in Kyle Larson for either Darlington or Homestead.
And, right.
You know, you can get away with another guy like a Ross Chastain or anybody else. I mean, there's a lot of guys that can do just fine at those tracks, you know, Noah Gregson or Carson Hocevar. I've already used Hocevar, but you get the point. There's plenty of guys good at that track type that would be happy to use. So I think this is the spot to use Tyler Reddick.
I agree with you there. I'm going to save him. I'm penciling him in for Chicago Street Course. That's kind of where I have him right now. But yeah, I think that's a great pick.
Yeah, I totally forgot about Chicago Street Course. But again, we'll have SGVG there in the 16, which is a potential spot I could use 16 instead of Roval. We'll have, I'm sure, some other guys, you know, road course ringers or whatever running it. Plus, you know, Christopher Bell looked great there last year. Martin Truex Jr. is always in play. Austin Cindric himself is in play there. So there's potential for other guys there. So it's either the street course or Coda. And I'm going to go with Coda for Tyler Reddick.
Yep. So I have Cindric. You have Reddick. See if you can extend that points lead that you have on me. We're already going to be six races into this 36 race season, which, man, it's flying, but it's been awesome.
Six of the way after this weekend. Yeah.
Yep. So we move on to our picks to win. I'm due for a win. I haven't had a win yet.
You are.
And I need one.
Wait, who did I pick at? Who did I pick at Bristol?
You picked Blaney.
So I think I finally break the top 10 streak?
You did, and you've been getting worse with finishes every single race. So you started off with Byron, who won at Daytona, and then Chastain, seventh at Atlanta. You had Hamlin, who was eighth at Vegas, Reddick, who was 10th at Phoenix, Blaney, who was 16th at Bristol.
Oh no. Got turned around.
Meanwhile, I have been 21st at Daytona, 17th at Atlanta, 5th at Vegas, 6th at Phoenix, and 5th at Bristol. I had Larson last week at Bristol.
There you go. Tough one, man. Pick to win. I mean, obviously I like Reddick, but
I know what I'm picking no matter what you pick. This could be the first week that we land on the same one.
Yeah. You're picking Reddick, so it doesn't matter.
I'm picking Reddick. Yeah. I'm picking Reddick.
I'm just thinking about it because, like, Reddick theoretically should be in the optimal strategy, even though he doesn't have a win this year and his points situation is precarious. He can just get in with a win. So I don't think now is the time to points race for them. So I do like Reddick a lot. I keep a little bit wanting to go really outside the box and take Daniel Suarez because he can go on the winning strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's way too risky. But again, we're not like competing for a 36 for 36 points title here or anything. We're just trying to have fun, pick winners. So I don't hate that. Soros has been really good here, honestly. Remember, he got punted out of the way on that last restart because Briscoe shoved Chastain into him. Yep. And then Soros goes flying into the pits, all pissed at everybody and their brother or whatever it was. Yeah, so I don't hate Soros here. Honestly, I don't hate Soros here. I'm going to go Martin Truex Jr.
Interesting. I didn't expect
totally
that.
Out of left field. Totally out of left field. I'm going to go Martin Truex Jr.
Finished seventh here last or in 2022. I like it.
It's just out of left field. I don't know. It's just something that came to me.
Can't argue that Truex is running really well this year. Like I said, I was surprised that his green flag speed and average running position, he ranked second in both behind Hamlin. That team is running very well this year, not quite getting the finishes that they deserve. But
they won a road course race last year. So,
yep. So I have Reddick, you have Truex. We are on the Toyota train for COTA. And then again, 36 for 36, I have Cindric and you have Reddick. So we both have Reddick for continuing on. That's the good thing. If Reddick goes out and wins this, yeah, I'm going to lose points to you in 36 for 36, but I'm going to have the winner and and our picks to win. So
exactly.
So yeah, you got anything else this week or?
No, I don't know. 36 for 36 is interesting because, you know, we could have a guy win both stages and not win the race and actually finish with more points than the winner.
Accurate. Yeah. I hate that they brought cautions back for stages at road courses. That's just annoying. It just adds another layer of having to try to figure this shit out, and that's not fun.
Yep. Certainly is, but there we go.
Yep. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back next week to talk about Richmond, which is going to be a Sunday night race on Easter. So Richmond's always a good race. I like Richmond. That'll be fun breaking that down. But we got our first road course race of the season this weekend with COTA, the Echo Park Texas Grand Prix. Good luck to everybody with your bets this week. Go Tyler Reddick, and we'll talk to you next week. See you guys.